My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this edition of Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. I'm your host, Jeff Safford, here with you on another beautiful Wednesday afternoon here on the beautiful campus of Dominican University of California here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. We're off and rolling once again this week. We got lots of stuff to get to. Our show today is kind of all over the place. We're starting, of course, with the Final Four is coming up this weekend. It's four is set. We've got Villanova, Oklahoma, Syracuse, and North Carolina. The four teams headed to Houston this weekend. Saturday night starts it all. The championship game coming on Monday. So we'll get into all of that. And then our second segment, we're going to get into kind of a joint segment a little bit. We're going to start with a little bit of interesting news that about algebra. I know math may not come up that much on our show. I mean, we talk about statistics and things like that, but talking a little algebra and how maybe algebra may be going out the door. You'll have to listen and find out about that. And then also some stories going on about Easter egg hunts this weekend. Yeah, you know, Easter was this past weekend. Everybody, hope everybody had a great Easter. I had a pretty good Easter. I was a little bit sick, as you can hear. I'm a little bit still under the weather, but we're getting there. And we're going to talk a little bit about Easter egg hunts and parents at Easter egg hunts. I saw a couple of stories pop up. I thought we'd talk about that. And our third segment, we're going to go into the NBA. We're going to talk about Warriors from last night, victory again against the Wizards on their quest to 73 wins. We saw a cool moment with Craig Seger last night on TNT. We'll go into that a little bit. The Lakers, could things get any worse? We'll talk about what's going on with D'Angelo Russell and Nick Young and that whole fiasco down in Los Angeles. And then the final segment of our show, we're going to get into our bet picks of the week. I finally lost my bet pick from last week. I now have one in the loss column. I had picked all the right games up to that point. I lost that one. And we'll have our brew of the week. This week, we kind of switched it up. First couple of weeks, we did some breweries where we looked at, you know, Russian River Brewery. We looked at Bear Republic. We did Moylan's. And this week, last week, I did one of my favorite watering holes in the Flatiron. I featured them on the segment. And this week, I'm going to feature of Singular Brew of the Week. And this one, I actually tried it this past weekend, and it just blew my mind. So you're going to have to wait and see about the Brew of the Week at the end of the show and my Picks of the Week. Those will be the last segment of the show. All right, so let's get things rolling here. We're talking the Final Four to start things off. As I mentioned at the very beginning, the matchups are set. The Final Four is set. We have Villanova taking on Oklahoma first on Saturday night, and then Syracuse, the Syracuse Orange, number 10 seed, taking on North Carolina. Now, this is the one that I think everybody kind of has circled, not just in Western New York. I mean, I'm sure that place was just a nut bin on Sunday night. Yeah, Sunday night. I mean, even if they did have school the next day, Syracuse is one of those places that, well, how my sister described it, she went there for a while, and she described that basketball is just king, that professors on game days will cancel class if there's a game, or if, you know, probably the day after something like that happened, they might cancel class, and it almost becomes like a local holiday. I mean, the videos coming in from Syracuse, like from Fraternity Row, just thousands of students in front of these fraternity houses just going nuts, just buck wild, just thousands of people. Looked like a really fun time. My team that I support was supporting, the Oregon Ducks. They came one game short. They ran into the buzzsaw that is Buddy Hield, and man, he was fantastic. They will be taking on Villanova. But back to Syracuse, the Orange, this is a very interesting team, and I kind of talked about them a little bit last week and kind of mentioned this, was that this is not a team that is full of lottery picks and high recruits and all of these things that Jim Boeheim teams have been in the past. You think back to 2 or 3 years ago, the last time Syracuse was in the Final Four, you had guys like C.J. Fair on the team and Jeremy Grant and, you know, guys that are in the NBA now and Tyler Ennis was actually the year after that. He wasn't on that team. But they did have Michael Carter Williams, who was a lottery pick and is still a point guard in the NBA. And that's we've seen the talent on Syracuse teams before, even going back to Carmelo Anthony and back in those days. And this team is not that at all. I mean, their point guard is Trevor Cooney, a guy who's been kind of a role player off the bench for a huge part of his career, playing behind a lot of the guys that I've mentioned in that last statement. And now he's kind of leading the show. But, you know, a lot of people didn't see them getting into the tournament. And talking to my sister again, who still has a lot of contacts in, you know, Western New York, where Syracuse is, just from her time there, she still keeps in contact with me. She talked about the feel on the campus, and when Syracuse was selected into the tournament, even the campus itself was surprised. Like, they were surprised they even got in. So even the Syracuse fans themselves didn't have any expectations for this team. And you could make an argument that this team if it's not as big or not bigger of a Cinderella than some of the mid-majors we've seen in years past. Teams like Butler and Wichita State and VCU and George Mason. George Mason might be a little bit of a... George Mason may be the one team that sits kind of alone by themselves, because that team truly was a Cinderella story. But you look at the Syracuse team, and yes, they come from a major conference. They played in the ACC. They have a great coach in Jim Boeheim and a great history of basketball. I mean, they play in the Carrier Dome, where they can pack 30-plus thousand people in there for a basketball game. I've heard it's loud as heck, like Autzen Stadium loud in Oregon. You know, just the place shakes, and you can't even hear yourself think. And, you know, yeah, they've got all that, and it's not like Wichita or Butler where it's playing in a small conference, but who saw this coming? Who saw this team doing anything? I mean, this team lost to Pittsburgh in the first round of the ACC tournament before the big dance. They didn't have momentum going into the tournament, and by the way, Pitt, the team that Syracuse lost to ended up losing early on in the NCAA tournament themselves. So, you know, it's not like Pitt went on a big run after they beat Syracuse. No, they were a one and done. I believe they lost to Wisconsin in the first round of the tournament. And, you know, Wisconsin went on to do great things. They made it to the Sweet 16, should have made it to the Elite Eight. If you didn't watch that game against Notre Dame, the officiating was really bad down the stretch. And to me, I think the game got taken away from them. But that's a whole nother conversation. So the Syracuse team, it's all about, you know, you look at how they play, it is that defense. And that is what's got them to this point. And this team, they got hot, they made some shots, and they got a little bit lucky with the bracket as well. I mean, Michigan State going down in the first round helped Syracuse immensely. You know, that it took that matchup out of the cards for the Cues. So to get to the Sweet 16, instead of playing a team like, you know, instead of playing Michigan State to get to the Sweet 16, Syracuse plays Middle Tennessee, you know, gets through to the Sweet 16. Not that there's anything wrong with Middle Tennessee. They were able to shock Michigan State. We talked a lot about that game last week. And, you know, and they were able to take care of business this past weekend. They were way behind against Virginia and had that huge comeback and big run to close it out, where they're hitting shots from the outside. And, you know, it's just sometimes you're just the team of destiny, so to speak. And Syracuse kind of looks that. And it's kind of a never say die mentality. I mean, you're down to a team in Virginia by 16. They're the number one seed in the Elite Eight. You know, Virginia had completely dominated Syracuse this season. They won both matchups in really convincing fashion. And Syracuse, you know, they're down by 16. Everybody's thinking, all right, this is the end of the Cuse. You know, they had a nice run. You know, good job, Jim Boeheim, but you're going to end up one round short. And Virginia, the number one seed, is going to run through. Well, not so fast. And Syracuse was able to do it, you know. I mean, wow. I mean, I'm still shocked. Like, Kevin Harlan called it a Easter miracle on Sunday night, and I kind of agree with him. He kind of got some flack for that, saying that it was a little bit insensitive to bring the religious thing into it, but I thought it was a great little comment that he had, like a real classic, you know, do you believe in miracles? Yes, type moment, you know, where the broadcaster brings it in something like that. And because that's what it was. I mean, nobody, not even Jim Boeheim, saw this coming. You could see that when he got off the, you know, when he was on the podium talking after the game, he was, you know, all he could say was, I'm really proud of my guys and their effort. And, you know, here they are. Cuse, it'll be interesting to see. The big thing will be, I mentioned it, will that defense, that zone defense, they're playing North Carolina, will that zone defense be able to limit the Tar Heels in the paint? It's been well documented that North Carolina does not shoot the ball well from the outside. So if I were Syracuse, I would really try to deny the paint, play good contesting defense, try to force North Carolina into some turnovers, and force them into jump shots. And if Syracuse can do that, they might be able to hang around in this game. In the two games that Syracuse played against North Carolina, Syracuse lost both. I don't know how that will equate into anything at this point, because this Syracuse team is completely different than they were back when they played. But both games were close. And the first game was kind of odd circumstances as well. First game taking place in Syracuse, because it was the first game that Jim Boeheim came back from his 9-game suspension from. So, you know, you got the first game back with the coach, you know, that can always be a little bit weird. So, you know, we're just going to have to watch and see how this one plays out. UNC is the big favorite right now in Vegas with a 9.5 spread the last time I looked right before I went on this show, so we're going to have to wait and see who I think will win that one and to see if I will pick that one to bet on later in the show. And moving on to the next matchup, this one's all about Villanova, you know, all about Villanova and Oklahoma, obviously, because they're the two teams in it, but the guy that everybody is focused on is, who I mentioned earlier, is Buddy Hield. This guy's averaging 29 points a game. He's been absolutely fabulous. I mean, he lit the Ducks up in the Elite Eight. I mean, just lit them up. He was all over the floor, sinking three-pointers, you know, going to the basket. I mean, this guy was unstoppable and really just put the team on his back and said, I will make sure that my team makes it to the Final Four. And granted, the Ducks didn't play their game either, but part of that was because of the pressure Buddy Hield was putting the Ducks on. You know, every time the Ducks would go down and miss a shot, Buddy Hield would be coming back the other way and putting another three-pointer in the basket. And when you have a guy doing that against you and you're not on the top of your game, you're going to get buried fast. And that's exactly what Buddy Hield did to the Ducks on Saturday night. And looking at Buddy Hield, you got to like this guy. And I really hope that this kid wins the Naismith Award. He definitely deserves it. He's, you know, not only is he a fabulous player on the court, but off the court, he's been nothing but cordial with media guys. Comes from a very, very humble beginning. There was a tweet of a picture that came out this afternoon that showed a kind of a makeshift basketball hoop that Buddy Hield made growing up. That was the basket that he practiced on. It was just like a, you know, a big stake that you could see like on a vineyard or something with a big basket attached to it at the end. You know, it was very crude. It's like, man, I'm pretty sure Dr. Naismith had a better basketball hoop when he was creating basketball back in the day. Man. Excuse me. And, you hear all the stories about him just going to the gym at 5-6 in the morning, you know, practicing, just working hard. And he's a senior, you know. You see so many guys that leave early from school and, you know, go after the money and the glitz and the glam. And that's not Buddy Hield. You know, Buddy Hield is about working. It's about improving himself. It's about improving his teammates. And, you know, I really like that. And, excuse me, jeez. And I hope that Buddy Hield can, you know, perform well, and especially in the bright lights. And, you know, he'll be relatively close to his home state. You know, Oklahoma and Texas are kind of neighbors to each other, even though he will be in Houston, which is way down in the southern part of the state. But again, it's a very interesting matchup because you look at Villanova, and Villanova is a team that is big, they're athletic, and they play great defense. They're another team that has a fantastic defensive set, and that is kind of the matchup. Will Villanova's defense be able to handle Buddy Hield? And Hield and Oklahoma got the best of Villanova early on in the year in December in one of those early game tournaments, you know, that showcase some of the better teams. And Oklahoma just blew them out. So that's an interesting thing. But, I mean, how much weight does that really have? Probably not a whole lot when it comes down to it. It's who's playing the best right now, and you're going to have to wait and see who I think, again, who's going to win in the last segment of the show. I'm going to keep you guys on pins and needles waiting. So that's going to wrap up our first segment. We're going to head to a break here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. You're listening to Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. I'm Jeff Safford. We'll be right back after a couple of PSAs. Stay tuned.
I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trapped.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In biology, in English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today.
The only thing I didn't learn
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
Meet Dennis. He just had a really bad day and is about to go over the edge with rage.
I am untethered and my rage knows no bounds!
This aggressive behavior has become all too common. According to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, nearly 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner in the U.S. during 1 year. So don't be like Dennis. Join the fight against domestic violence today.
Hi, this is Josh Groban. My favorite thing about music is its ability to inspire and nourish the soul. That's why I'm proud to work with Feeding America, an organization that inspires hope for families in need and helps nourish the 16 million kids in this country struggling with hunger. The Feeding America nationwide network of food banks gathers surplus food and helps get it to kids in need, but they can't do it alone. Find out how you can help at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. I'm your host, Jeff Safford. We just wrapped up our final four segment for the night. You're going to have to tune in to kind of broke down the two matchups, talked about who I like and who I don't, and you'll have to see what my prediction is for the winners at the end of the show. I'll also have my bet picks of the week. I might pick both games. I might pick one. You never know. You'll have to listen and find out. We'll also have our Brew of the Week segment in our final segment of the show. For this segment, we're going to go kind of a little bit off the rails from what we usually talk about. Not completely off the rails, but I just saw this story and a couple stories and thought they were very interesting, and they aren't really linked in that much, but I guess we'll stick them together in the same segment. And we're going to start, I kind of started talking about it in the opening, we're going to talk some math. Math, 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 math. Remember that, what is that, School of Rock? Yeah, that's School of Rock, Jack Black. Yeah, there's parts of that song I can't repeat on radio. Well, I guess I could technically, but since we're not policed by the FCC, but if I said some of the stuff Jack Black says in that little song, Stu would get mad at me. So Stu Horn, our great head man of Penguin Radio here, he started Penguin Radio, actually. And that's kind of interesting that a teacher started it all, kind of a student organization. But anywho, we're going to talk some algebra. And the reason I bring this up is because there's a story going around about a book that's going to be released. It's called Math Myth. And the book claims that algebra should not be taught and should not be taught in a subject in school, and that it is not needed for everyone. The kind of the main claim, kind of the overarching claim of this book, you know, is that algebra is a huge obstacle for students. And it can lead to less success in education because students are fighting algebra and they can't pass algebra. And, you know, if you kind of creates this domino effect, it's like, well, if you can't pass algebra, then you're not going to get to this grade or be able to go into this major. So it does make a little bit of sense to me. And I tell you what, if, I mean, I am a senior and it wouldn't benefit me all that much, but I mean, I would be feeling pretty darn joyous if this were to be the case. It would just make me be like, oh, hallelujah. No algebra. Hallelujah. Oh my goodness. Oh. Yeah, I had to throw that in there. I mean, Easter was a couple days, but hey, he's still got to get a little bit, you know, a little bit joyous. I mean, he did rise, right? If you're a Christian believer, you know, it's, you know, hallelujah. If they decided that algebra was not going to be a thing, I would be extremely happy about it because, quite frankly, I fought with algebra my entire academic life. From when I was a little kid in the fifth or sixth grade, you know, to high school. I mean, there was one teacher I had in high school in both my sophomore and junior years where, I guess it was just my junior year, not my sophomore year. But this guy, it didn't matter how hard I worked or what I did, it was just like, it was like he got joy of giving me like a C minus or a D. It was like, yeah, you know, like, I don't like you. You know, it just made me so mad. And I can totally see where this would be a decent argument that, you know, kids do struggle with algebra. I struggled with algebra. And if it's not all important for living life, then why should everybody have to take algebra? And if it's keeping kids, you know, from getting a good education or continuing taking a good education, why should we force kids to do it? And, you know, I understand what I can already hear what some of the naysayers would say about this, that, oh, you use algebra in, you know, to do your mortgage and, you know, all that, you know, and to do your taxes, you know, it all uses arithmetic and blah, 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 blah. You know, I can already hear all that mumbo jumbo, but I don't want to hear it. Okay. I'm sorry, but I don't think I've used I as the variable in real life ever. I mean, come on. And anybody that's taken algebra knows all about that stupid I and how much anger can just get built up by that stupid thing. And, you know, and there are aspects of algebra that are important. I'll go with you with that, you know. But why not just teach those specific skills to kids instead of teaching them all this stuff that's completely superfluous, you know, like that's irrelevant. Meaning if you're not a grammar wizard like me and knows what the word superfluous means, but you know, it's, if some of it doesn't matter and you're never going to use it in your entire life, why should these high school and college kids spend hours and hours of homework time and study time on crap that's not going to do them any good? You know, like, when was the last time you saw a high school class that actually taught you how to do your taxes or handle a mortgage? You know, that's the type of stuff that you're going to be doing as an adult, you know, of course. But, you know, but why don't we teach our kids that specifically, you know, and teach them the skills they need to do that instead of just putting algebra? It's like almost like trying to, it's a little too broad, it seems like, in my eyes. And obviously I'm not an academic and, you know, I'm not a math professor, but to me, common sense and logic kind of points towards that we should be putting our educational ideas to stuff that'll actually benefit life. And that's what it's all about, right? That's what education is about. We're get an education so that we can be successful and, you know, a good person in society. You know, that's what it's all about in the end. And And if you want to take algebra in college, and if you're really good at it, great. You know, that's what college is for, and higher education. You go into, you know, like what I'm doing. I'm a sports communications student, and, you know, I like talking in front of microphones about sports, so that's what I'm doing. So if a kid just can't get enough of the Pythagorean theorem, you know, heck, have at it. You know, let him do it. But it's not for everybody, and that, to me, is the biggest point of this whole thing. And so kind of staying on this kind of, I got a little bit, I guess, holy with the hallelujah, little snippet at right there. I guess we'll, you know, we're talking about Easter in this next little part. I mean, that's kind of on topic, right? But this next topic I'm going to talk about is, I mean, I'm sure a lot of you weren't at Easter egg hunts this weekend, I'm sure a huge amount of you have been. I remember growing up as a kid going to Easter egg hunts, and they're a very big deal. And, you know, and I've even heard now of, like, adult versions of Easter egg hunts where they're like, you know, I heard one story from a classmate where they do this thing called the golden egg, where there's one egg hidden somewhere on this big property that's, like, you know, big. It's like, it was something like 40 or 50 acres, you know, so you're like driving around on four-wheelers and stuff looking for this thing, and inside this golden egg is $100, and you're in teams of two, and whoever the team that finds the golden egg gets the $100, you know, so they split it 50-50, I'm imagining, unless you get somebody who's just a complete, you know, just tough on you, and just kind of, you know, that would kind of suck, right? Like, you know, you're in a team and you both find the 100, and the one partner is like, "Eh, I'm just gonna take it all." You know, that's not quite how it would work. But to me, that sounds kind of fun. But, you know, the stereotypical Easter egg hunt is, you know, for all the little ones, where they put candy and, you know, little things, and for the kids, you know. And, you know, for me growing up, there was a big one at a local elementary school. They lined all the kids up by age group, and they, like, shot off this gun, you know, and, you know, one of those, like, track and field guns, you know. No, it's not talking like a Colt 45, you know, but, you know, they would shoot a gun in the air, and all these kids would just run, you know. But the stories that are coming out, to me, are like, are you kidding me? It's where these parents are getting involved, and one story that really caught my eye was a story about the Pez factory in Orange, Connecticut. Just as, you know, the Pez dispenser, it's, you know, there's those little kind of chalky candies, you know, their colors. And, you know, if you don't know what Pez is, look it up on the internet. I'd be shocked to find somebody that doesn't know what Pez is. But every year Pez does a free Easter egg hunt for kids, you know, like, that's pretty cool, like a cool charitable thing. But this year they had to cancel it because of the behavior of some parents. And I do have a little bit of audio for you guys to listen to. It's from WFSB Channel 3 in Connecticut. So, barring a technical difficulty, we should be able to get this story for you right now. Here it is.
Fairness News reporter Mark Robbins joins us live now in Orange with that story. Good evening, Mark.
Well, good evening, Kevin. This was the third annual Easter egg hunt sponsored by the Pez Company. They knew this was a growing event, but they never dreamed that something that was becoming wildly popular would become so wild.
The field adjacent to the Pez Visitor Center was the site of the holiday Easter egg hunt. It was free to the public, and throughout the week leading up to it, it was attracting a lot of attention on the Pez Facebook page. These pictures show how the massive crowd was building. The event was supposed to take place in three stages, broken down into age groups. Youngest kids first, 12-year-olds, the oldest group. But parents didn't pay much attention to procedure. In fact, reports say a lot of adults didn't stand still.
When it came time for like 10:30, like the parents just bum rushed that area.
So we started talking to folks of, hey, you know, this is supposed to start at a directed time that we've posted. Let's wait. We'll give a whistle. We'll give the signal to start this. And that lasted about a minute. And then folks just rushed the field and took everything.
So when my son left, he had a broken basket and was hysterically crying.
The Pez general manager and his staff tried to regain order, but things quickly spiraled out of control.
It was like locusts. Everybody descended and left.
It left Pez with a lot of disappointed children. The company then set up a backup plan, giving out free stuff. But for many, the lines were too long and the mood wasn't right.
I'm not going to take my kids somewhere where now I feel like you're not putting their safety, you know, in any way, shape, or form.
It's unfortunate people left disappointed, and that's certainly never the goal with that. It's just, you know, supposed to be a fun, free activity, and we did our best. Unfortunately, it just fell a little short.
All right, so that's the story from Orange, Connecticut, from the Pez factory. If you're just tuning in, this is Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. I'm Jeff Safford here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. And oh my goodness. Wow. That was my first reaction when I saw that. And like, I mean, I understand, like, I've heard the stories about parents like kind of helping their kids along with Easter egg hunts, but is this what it's becoming? Like, parents are like, they're like rushing the field, like, you know, like causing anarchy at an Easter egg hunt, you know, a free Easter egg hunt where there's no money involved. Like, oh my gosh, like that just, it was very surprising. And the other point about this is that, guys, we're talking about Pez candy here. Pez, you know, it's not like, it's not even Reese's, you know, it's not even the good stuff. It's not even, you know, Pez is just kind of, you know, like the stuff you'd get at the dollar store, you know, and, you know, that's the Halloween candy that they give out to kids if, you know, if dad's like, oh crap, I forgot to go get Halloween candy, you know, that's the last stuff that's left on the shelf, you know. It's, you know, not that there's anything wrong with Pez, I'm not going to badmouth Pez, but Pez is, you know, they know what their niche is. They know what their market is. They know it's kind of a cheap little fun candy. You know, that's why they have the Pez dispenser. You know, that's like a nice little gimmick for them. You know, it, you know, puts butts in the seats, so to speak. And, you know, the point is that there's nothing super special about Pez, you know. And why would parents, you know, go crazy over Pez candy? And like, as the guy said it, I thought the funniest line of the whole thing was that they descended like locusts. You know, it was like almost like a thing from the Bible, like the Book of Revelations. You know, like that's kind of a perfect image of, you know, all these parents just like swarming in and taking it all, you know. And then there was, you know, that parent that was talking about his kid got his basket broken. It's like, oh my word, like what is happening? You know, like, people are getting pepper sprayed at Donald Trump rallies, and they're rushing the field at an Easter egg hunt for four-year-olds. Like, what is going on? Like, this is just, oh boy, I can't even imagine what people from other countries would think of this. You know, like, oh, you know, typical Americans, you know, like, oh, geez. Like, wow, wow, wee, wah. That one really just was unbelievable. It was too unbelievable for me not to bring it to the show. And you know, I a lot of the times we're talking sports and, you know, and beer and, you know, manly stuff, but this was just crazy, and it's just been kind of going, you know, making its rings around the social media world, and thought it was really interesting. Speaking of pepper spray, I even heard of an Easter egg hunt in Texas where pepper spray had to be used on parents. And it's just like, wow, like, how competitive can you be? Like, it's not like the kids are competing for QB1, you know, on the football team. You know, I'm pretty sure that, you know, that Coach Taylor isn't down watching the Easter egg hunt, you know? Like, you know, Johnson over there, I don't know. You know, he's only got 15 eggs. I was hoping he was going to get 20 or 25, you know. You know, things aren't looking too good for him. You know, like, it's ridiculous. Like, why are people so competitive about this stuff? And to me, and if you're a parent listening to this and you're a little bit too overly competitive, you know, maybe this can be your little, you know, humble moment, you know, that sometimes is the best way to be served a little bit of humble pie. Like, I know I remember one point at an Easter egg hunt, I went with my dad, and it was just my dad. My mom wasn't there, and for whatever reason, that seems very odd. There must have been some explanation, because my mom would never miss something like that. You know, moms, they're always all about, like, you know, oh, I got to get a picture and, you know, all that type of stuff. But I remember the horn goes off and I start running after, going after the eggs. And I looked at my dad and he was just like, well, don't look at me, you know, go, run. You know, it's just like, you know, where is our country going? But, so that's going to wrap that up before I start babbling anymore. Going to head into our next segment of the show. We're heading into our NBA segment of the show. We're going to take a little break beforehand, though. We saw talk about a cool moment that happened with Craig Sager last night and during the Warriors-Wizards game. We'll talk about the game itself. Also, the Warriors are in action tonight, or will be in action. They're playing a back-to-back. They're headed to Salt Lake City, Utah, to play the Utah Jazz, and that game, to me, has trap game written all over it. So this is Triple B, Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. We're headed to a break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Take an ordinary putty knife and scrape off the old wax ring. Place the new wax ring over the flange, then line up the bolts with the bowl and gently set in place, making sure a proper seal is created with the flange and drain. Next?
Dad?
Yeah, sweetie?
Is that an old plumbing manual?
Oh, yeah, honey.
We really need to get some new books.
Right, do you want me to stop?
Nah, I kinda wanna know how it ends.
Okay, tighten the bolts, line up the flushing valve to the opening in the top of the bowl, and secure the tank with a screwdriver and crescent wrench.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
It takes 12 years to create a graduate. It takes about the same time to create a dropout. The difference between a child becoming one or the other could be you. Studies prove that reading to a child regularly dramatically improves reading skills. And kids who read well by third grade are four times as likely to graduate. So United Way is calling for 1 million volunteers over the next 3 years. We're asking you to step up, make a pledge, tutor a child who needs help, mentor a kid who needs someone on their side, volunteer to read to children, make a difference. Because when a child advances, we all advance. Entire communities improve. The path to success or failure starts long before graduation day, and the difference between a graduate and a dropout could be you. Be a reader, tutor or mentor, give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Take the pledge. Go to liveunited.org now. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. I'm your host, Jeff Safford. We've been going all around the place today. We started our show, a little NCAA basketball talk, the Final Four. We're going to get kind of back into that later on as we finish up the show in our last segment, about quarter to six. We got about 10, 15 minutes left in the show. And we talked about a couple of interesting topics, how maybe algebra might be on its way out in the academic world, and some crazy parents fighting over eggs filled with Pez candies. And if you missed any of our, you know, any parts of this show or any other shows on Penguin Radio, you can go on to radio.dominican.edu, click on student shows, and you will find all of our shows from this semester archived there. So if you want to listen to It's a Trap, the Star Wars theme show, or my show, or you missed a segment from my show you want to listen to again, then it's all right there for you, along with athletic broadcasts as well. We've been pretty quiet as of late, but we got some more Dominican softball coming your way in the next week or so. So stay tuned for that as well. Myself and Lizette Cabrera are on the call for those games. So heading into our last segment now, we're going to start with some NBA talk. And I really want to start it off with during the Wizards and Warriors game from last night. There was a really cool moment that happened with Craig Sager and head coach of the Washington Wizards, Randy Whitman. It was a really cool moment, and I actually have audio of that. I'll play in a second. And if you don't know the story of Craig Sager, I mean, if you've watched any NBA basketball over the last, I don't know, 15, 20, 30 years, he's been on the sidelines for forever. He's best known for looking dressed to the nines always. He's very colorful, I guess you could say. There's no real other way to describe how Craig Sager dresses, but he is in a battle with cancer right now, and he actually missed a lot of time because of chemo treatment and all of those other things. And, you know, his diagnosis looks very bleak, but similar to guys like Stuart Scott, he's not letting that get him down, and he's kind of serving as an inspiration for the entire NBA. So here is Coach Randy Whitman from the Washington Wizards with Craig Sager from last night. This is a pretty cool moment, so here it is from the NBA on TNT.
Craig Sager with Wizards, head coach Randy Whitman.
Well, Whit, you're trying to do what nobody's been able to do all year, and that's beat the Warriors here at home. After the first quarter down five, you feel like you're still in a position?
Well,
like,
first of all, this game means nothing, Craig. Having you back, it's been 32 years since I've known you, and there's a lot of people out there that are praying for you, and you got to just keep fighting, because I love that you're back here. I miss you, and we'll continue to pray for you, and you just keep fighting. Other than that, I like where we're at.
All right, that's all we need to know. Thank you very much for everything. Thank you, Mark.
So that was Craig Sager with head coach of the Washington Wizards, Randy Whitman. And wow, how cool was that in, you know, the middle of the game, and to be able to say something like that to Sager? I mean, I thought that was really, really cool. And Steph Curry also had a cool moment with Craig Sager after the game in his post-game interview. That interview was a little bit longer, so I'm not going to play that one for you. You kind of probably can get the gist of what Steph was going to say. You know, he went on the, you know, you're inspiration for us, you know, kind of going at, you know, playing back-to-back, that's nothing compared to what you go through every day. And, you know, just for, you know, in a sport, you know, this type of thing isn't always something that's talked about all the time. And, you know, and you got to remember that these guys in front of the camera and in front of the microphone, they're real people. You know, they live lives, they have family, they have problems, you know, they fight addictions, they fight diseases, just you know, just like every other ordinary person. And, you know, for Craig Sager to be out doing this while fighting this terrible disease is, I think, very, very inspirational. And, you know, like, and how cool is it, too, that have Randy Whitman kind of take time out of his, you know, his days in the heat of the battle against the Warriors to kind of take a moment to, you know, kind of pay homage, you know, and, you know, that speaks a lot to Sager as well, you know, just seeing how Coach reacted. You hear Whitman say he's known Sager for 32 years, you know, that it shows that the NBA, not just the broadcast community, but the players and the coaches also have a, you know, have a great appreciation and respect for Craig Sager. So that says a lot about him as a journalist as well, you know, because I don't know why the NBA makes coaches answer those couple of questions, you know, after, you know, first quarter or halftime. You know, that is a tough one. And, you know, in my one of the funnier sideline reporter head coach relationship is Craig Sager with Coach Popovich, Greg Popovich, over in San Antonio with the Spurs. You know, their banter back and forth is really funny. If you know anything about Coach Pop, you know, he doesn't like to say anything to the media. You know, it's like, you know, when they ask Pop a question, you know, is, you know, how do you, you know, do you think your team can do any better on, you know, on the boards in the second half? His answer will be yes. You know, like, he won't say anything. You know, he won't go into any type of detail at all. It'll be very minimal answer from Coach Pop. And, you know, so I just thought, I saw that last night when I was watching the game, and I thought it was a really cool moment. And, you know, so Craig Sager, keep on fighting. You know, you're fighting the good fight. And, you know, and I know that millions of people around the country and the world love watching, tuning in to NBA basketball, and he is a huge reason why. And looking at the game from last night, it was kind of an interesting game, the Warriors and Wizards. The Wizards actually looked good for a while. At one point, they're up by 10 late, or were up by 9. They had an and-one opportunity to go up 10, but missed the free throw. I think it was Marcin Gortat who missed the free throw. So they had an opportunity, and they were well ahead late in the second quarter. You know, you're thinking, oh, if the, you know, the Wizards can, you know, Wizards are looking good, they're going to go into the half with the lead, you know, maybe scaring the Warriors a little bit. And then I read a blog from the local Washington, D.C. area, excuse me, that kind of talked about the run. The Warriors then, very late in the second quarter, went on a run. It was like, I blinked, and kind of the, how it went was, I blinked, and the Wizards were up by 9, and when I opened my eyes back up, the Warriors were up 3 going into half. And that's kind of how it felt. It really was pretty amazing how the Warriors just turned on the switch and just wham. They just went on this huge 12-0 run, and kind of that was, I think, the big moment in the game for really both teams. You know, the Warriors, they got it clicking. You know, they got the crowd back into it. The crowd was, you know, roaring. And, you know, once that run kind of put the Wizards on their back a little bit, the Wizards just couldn't recover. And that's what makes the Warriors so tough. You know, we're like, you can play a great half and, you know, be up by X amount of points against the Warriors, and the Warriors can make it go away like that. You know, they can go on this big run. They have, you know, and they can do it in so many ways. It's not just Steph Curry or Klay Thompson hitting big three balls. It's, you know, Draymond going into the paint. It's Andrew Bogut finding people. It's Iguodala. He's been hurt, but he's been a big part of the offense. Harrison Barnes can do a lot of different things. I mean, this is just a complete basketball team. And looking at where they're headed, they only need 6 more wins to pass that 72 mark and go over the Bulls for the record for most wins all time. And, you know, they need to go 6-2 down the stretch, and, You know, we saw interesting comment from Tony Parker talking about the Spurs. You know, the Warriors do have to play the Spurs coming down the stretch. And him saying that he wouldn't be a bit surprised if Popovich rests the big guys like he's done so many other times in those games. And you can't blame him. I mean, you see the look in the standings. The Warriors are up 5 on the Spurs right now. You know, so there's no chance of them catching them at this point, pretty much. And, you know, if they're completely out of it and have the second seed locked up, they wouldn't really have anything to play for. And so the Warriors, you know, their chances just keep looking better and better to get to that 73. And it's pretty amazing. I think, you know, that's one of those records that nobody thought would ever be broken. And here the Warriors are, you know, on the brink of getting there. And in the other story from the NBA, it's D'Angelo Russell and Nick Young from the Warriors. They had this spat, kind of a weird, almost gossipy spat about how Nick Young was filmed by D'Angelo Russell cheating on his fiance, and how it created this riff in the locker room. And it's like, oh my goodness, like, isn't there better, you know, better things for the Lakers to be doing right now? I mean, they're having what, the worst season in the history of their franchise, and this is just adding on to it. You know, these are two guys that the Lakers are hoping can take them a long way, and especially D'Angelo Russell. You know, they didn't draft him in the lottery last year for nothing, and it's going to be interesting to see how that all shakes out. You know, Kobe's on his way out now, and now the Lakers are, you know, heading into a whole new era. So it'll be interesting to watch and see. All right, so we're heading into the very last segments of our show here. Bets of the week and brew of the week. Sorry about that little problems with the mic there. Anyway, we're brews and picks of the week. Our brew of the week is actually a real interesting one. I tried it this past weekend. It's from a brewery in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I know it's not a local beer, but like we featured all the other time, but it's just so interesting. And the best part about it is it's a root beer. It's root beer. It's called Not Your Father's Root Beer from Small Town Brewery in La Crosse, Wisconsin. And myself, I'm a huge root beer guy. You know, I was a kid, I loved this stuff, you know. So somebody got a six-pack for me this weekend as like a little Easter gift. And I tell you what, I mean, this stuff, it is root beer. You know, it does not taste like alcohol at all. You know, it tastes like, you know, root beer float, root beer, you know, like put some ice cream in there and that baby would be ready to go. You know, it's really, really good stuff, but you know, it is beer. And that's kind of, I think, the thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is that root beer was originally created as an alcoholic drink. And for whatever reason, you know, part of it is it's really sweet. You know, it got popular with kids, so they decided to take the alcohol out of it. But root beer is still, you know, if you make it, you know, it's still typically an alcoholic drink. And this root beer, it's like, you know, it's like drinking a beer. You know, alcohol wise, it's about 5.9%. So basically 6%, if you don't want to get too, you know, if you just want to round up. So that's our brew of the week. It's really great stuff. And I tell you what, like, if you try this, you know, you will think, you know, if you had a blindfold on, you know, unless your palate is just so refined, I would be hard pressed. I'm sure you'd be hard pressed to say that that's got alcohol in it. Well, if you were to drink it fast, like you would a normal root beer, and you know, you'd probably, you know, 5 minutes later, like, huh, wow, what's that buzzing feel? I mean, you know, that would kind of go that way. But so we're just about out of time. Still going to make my picks. I've promised you my picks for the entire show for the Final Four. So here we go. First game, I guess we'll go in which game is played first. So we're going to start with Villanova and Oklahoma. Boomer Sooner, baby. I'm going with the Sooners. And talked about him throughout the whole segment, my Final Four segment, talked about Buddy Hield. He's the reason why. In college basketball and in basketball in general, it's a lot of the times, it's who's got the best player. You know, you think Kemba Walker with UConn and that run, and Carmelo Anthony and Dwayne Wade with Marquette, and how these really great players just put their team on their back, or Gordon Hayward at Butler is another one. You know, you think about, you know, what those guys do, and that's exactly what Buddy Hield is doing right now. In the sport of basketball, when you've got a player playing at as high of a level as Buddy Hield is, you know, and you got some good players around him, they're going to be a huge, you know, task to stop. And I don't think Villanova is going to be able to do it, because, you know, it's not just going to the rim and, you know, dunking and doing that type of stuff. Buddy Hield has range. You know, he can shoot the ball from the parking lot. You know, he reminds me of a little bit of Steph Curry, you know, how he can just hit shots from everywhere on the floor. So that's my pick there. And for my second pick, North Carolina and Syracuse, I'm going to take the Tar Heels in this one. And I just think the Tar Heels' experience and just their will to win is just going to be too much in this one. I think this team just really wants it, and I think we're going to be seeing Oklahoma and North Carolina playing against each other in the national championship game. And since we won't know the national champ, we won't be able to preview the national championship game because it's on Monday and our show's on Wednesday. Pick the champion, and when it's all said and done, I think North Carolina is going to be cutting the nets at the end of the day. So, North Carolina, as your national champion. For your bet pick of the week, I'm going to take, actually, will take Syracuse, even though I just picked North Carolina to win the national championship. I'm going to take Syracuse in the spread. For how, you know, and this went against me last week with, I picked Maryland and Kansas, and I thought the spread would help, but that didn't work out. But I'm sticking with it this week. Syracuse, I think, will keep it close. It's a Final Four game. You know, 10 points is a lot of points for North Carolina to have to cover. So that's my bet pick of the week. So you got it all now, and we're out of time. You're on Bros, Brews, and Bleachers. Hope everybody enjoyed the show. I'm Jeff Safford. We're going to go back to some music now here on Penguin Radio. So stay tuned for that, and make sure you tune in to all of our other student DJ shows here on Penguin Radio, the radio home of Penguin Athletics. So, have a good night, everybody. We'll see you later.